Former NHL goaltender for Hampton Oilers, generally all-around good guy, Joaquin Gage joins us. And Gager, that song must have teared you up a little bit, eh, big man?
Oh, you you definitely brought some memories back of the Roxy hearing that song, Stretty. Yeah. The eyes was the only thing that was hungry, that's for sure.
I love it. I love it.
It's great to be back on the air with you, buddy. I mean, it's always a pleasure being able to talk to a relative of Scott and Rob Niederwein. I always wanted to ask you, how many times did your agent actually have to mention that to GMs to further that illustrious career of yours?
So, for those who don't know, my cousins were Scott and Rob Niedermeyer, and they, you know, I guess you could say they had a, you know, decent career, probably underachieved a little bit. And, you know, my agent always say, hey, look, he's got the bloodlines. You know, it's just he's got to figure it out. You know, he's just got to figure it out. So, you know, I was like J.J. Watt's brothers. They keep getting recycled, or Gronkowski's brothers. Like, they keep getting chances because of the bloodlines. But, you know, I just had to be a good talker. So I learned how to fight. I'm like, there's nothing I could do better than those guys than fight and a better personality. That's it. Other than that, they pretty much have everything going on.
And maybe music taste. They were a little special with what they listened to. But I had to say something because it's funny. At any time between the hours of 2 and 6 during the week, if my phone starts blowing up, I know you've mentioned something about my slow glove hand. So
the slow glove hand or the eye issue where we chew from outside the blue line.
Jesus. That excrement-filled vocabulary of yours with my playing career is terrible.
I love it. I love it. Well, Gager, we're having you on. I want to talk to you about your career in the second half of this, but there's a lot of hockey things I want to get to. And number one is the idea that Edmonton Oilers Entertainment Group is going to have a hockey drive-in and some type of a beer garden, you know, where the old Bacharach Casino is right beside Rogers Place. And you know, I'm trying to just figure this out from the report that was on there, but my idea of the concept is that people will be staying inside their trucks. So there's a big screen. You stay inside your car, truck. Those are spread out. And then I don't know how exactly you get to the beer gardens or how exactly you get home if you stay there for, you know, I think they're going to do 80 games. So I don't know how you get home after that, but that's a general concept. And I'll say this. I went to Brett Kissel's outdoor concerts, about a month ago, and he had like 7 or 8, and I at first I'm like, I don't know how this can go. I loved it. The energy was great. There you could open your windows, but you could not go out of your car. We were at least 2 or 3 cars lengths from everybody else. Like, we were so spread out. So we were definitely safe. But when you hear this idea, this concept that is being put forth in my kind of like, you know, tell me what it's all about. What is your initial reaction as an Edmontonian, a hockey fan, and someone who, you know, may or may not go down there and check it out?
At first, when I heard about this, it brought me back to as a kid growing up on the mean streets of Kitsilano. When I was good, my mom would always take me to the White Spot, and I was always pumped about it because it was the drive-in White Spot, and they'd bring that big tray and go across the front seat, and you'd have your pirate pack and fish and chips. It was great, and all I can see is some sort of drive-in with maybe some roller skating wait staff and bringing great food from maybe around, like, different ways. Maybe certain restaurants come and they're so close to that taste of Edmonton, right? Like some sort of thing like that coming out. I think it's a fantastic idea. I mean, most of the cars are going to have to be left there. If I'm an Uber driver, I'm just sitting there waiting to pick someone up to take them home after that, because there's no way anyone should be driving if they're just sitting in their car or watching a game. But I think it's a fantastic idea. I'm all in. I'll take the FJ Cruiser down there for sure.
Yeah, see, I think there's a lot of value to it. And, you know, there's a lot of concern about how, if people start drinking, how are you going to keep people socially distanced? Well, again, at this Brett Kissel event, they had, there was people all over the place. Like, when people tried it, you couldn't even go to the bathroom there. Like, if you even try to get out of your car, someone was on you telling you to get back in your car right away. So, I mean, I've seen a model that works for this setup, and you're just replacing Brett Kissel, which is hard to do, with a big screen to watch hockey games. And you can imagine if the Oilers get, you know, we're assuming we'll get to that in a minute, but they're going to get past the Blackhawks and get in the second, third round, or a third, first round. Like, I think it'd be a lot of fun. Now, Connor, actually has a different perspective, and he's always a little bit more negative than you and I. So, Connor, what's your thing on this?
Well, I don't think I'm totally negative. Like, it sounds like a good idea, but if you give me the option between sitting in a car and watching a game from, like, 50 feet away versus sitting at home where the beer's in the fridge, I've got a bathroom, I can walk around and talk with friends, I can rewind the game if I want to watch something, it's an easy choice for me. I get the experience would be fun. I'm sure all those people standing in Ford Hall last playoff run had a really good time. But for me personally, give me my house, give me my couch, give me the fridge loaded with refreshments, and that's the way I'm going to watch the game personally.
No shared experience for you?
Well, I'll share it with the people in my cohort that I'm watching it with.
Okay, that's fair. Any rebuttal from you, Joaquin Gage, or what?
Well, he doesn't like to venture out too much, you know. I understand the millennial generation just want to sit at home, play with their joysticks, and watch the game. But to me, I'm not unlike you, Strids. I like new experiences, you know. And I think if I go down there and I do it once, it's one of those things that I did it. Maybe if I enjoyed myself, I might do it again. But I think we've had to adapt with so many things throughout these past few months, you know, something that's maybe a little different, maybe a little bit more fun. Like, how cool would that just to be driving down there and go and watch a different game? You know, it doesn't always have to be an Oilers game that you watch. I definitely I'm looking forward to doing something different throughout this whole playoff season for sure.
Joaquin Gage, just a former NHLer and a goaltender, we're talking about this idea of a drive-in, hockey drive-in and beer garden. You know, a lot of people texting in making a good point about the porta-potties. I don't like porta-potties at all. But I think you have to make it so people can't even get out of their car. Because once one person comes out of their car and where everyone's drinking, and let's say the Oilers are on a heater, like you're coming out there, people are going to be just joining all over the place, and then you lose control. And you know, I saw some comments from some city councilors say that, you know, if party gets out of control, it's shut down. So I don't think you can even let people pee in there, and that presents a problem. You might have to bring, you know, something to pee in your car. I don't know how that's going to look. But, you know, I think that's a big thing to consider as you look at this. And, you know, Gager, I would be for it. But there's a lot of things you have to do to make sure that it doesn't get out of control. Because if it, the first person goes out can stay out of their car, everyone's getting out of there and making it happen.
Well, yeah, it would have to be some sort of, like a beer garden. There would only be a limited amount of people, some sort of fencing around the place. And then, of course, people monitoring everything. The whole porta potty thing, those things are disgusting at the best of times. So, I don't know. They do have those. They did make those ones on White Ave, but yeah, it's the social distancing. I don't think it's. I'd love to see it, but yeah, there's so many things that they'd have to think about to make sure that to keep it under wraps.
Let's shift gears here and take a look at the Edmonton Oilers in their first round kickoff play-in with the Chicago Blackhawks. What would be the biggest challenge that Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen will face as far as preparing as a goalie after, you know, really not having done a lot of hockey over the last 4 or 5 months?
I think really the Oilers are in a really good position with the amount of experience, both of them in their 30s right now. I know I always, when I, not unlike yourself again, starts dominating in Europe when we had those breaks, I would always come back refreshed. You know, I'd usually gone on a trip somewhere skiing in Italy or something like that. I felt really ready to go. I think the little things that I've seen on Jason Gregor's little Instagram feed, he's got to get a selfie stick, by the way. He's got to straighten that hand. I don't know if he's drinking too much coffee in the morning, but that thing's making me sick. It's like watching the Blair Witch Project. But they look good. Like, I'm watching Mike Smith, and he's having fun, and he's doing a little goalie dance, and doing some. They just look like he's really ready to go. And Mikko just seems really robotic in his positioning and looking good. I think just being at that age and having that little bit extra rest, compared to some other teams, the Oilers are in a really good spot. I think as an older goalie, a little time off and just these last few weeks with the training camp, I think they'll just be fine.
So what about Mike Smith and his puck handling ability? Like, is that something that is that one of the first things to come back before, like, you know, the lazy glove hand or whatever, the reverse VH, whatever you want to call it?
Whatever. You're just born with it, Strud. You're just born with it. Unlike your Niedermeyer talent. But I think that's something that he'll have that when he's doing the Alzheimer tournaments one day and firing missiles up to guys with the far blue. It's like being an artist to a point with skills like that. Mike Smith, that'll never leave him. It's one of his greatest attributes, and he's just phenomenal at it.
Joined by Joaquin Gage, longtime professional NHL goalie and former Edmonton Oilers goalie. Gager, you know, looking at this series a little deeper, I wonder, do you feel it'd be easier for offensive players to find the rhythm, or guys that have to defend, or just, you know, team defense against those offensive players? Which side do you think can get their mojo back quicker?
That's a good question, sir. I've been thinking about this for a while. I do think that through the first few games, it will be a little choppy, a little sloppy. Guys are going to be going full blast and not having that, you know, just a week rest between the regular season and the playoffs that usually they have before. I think we're going to see some sloppy play, some sloppy goals, some missed assignments. On the offensive side, I think guys will be ready, but just because they really haven't played that much, right? And they haven't been on the ice. They haven't made those breakouts, getting into that game shape, getting touched, getting hit, right? So I really think that they're both going to be affected in a weird way, just because the amount of time off and the situation they're in with the Stanley Cup playoffs and competing for a Stanley Cup. Like, this is why we put skates on in the first place, right? It means so much to every guy out there, and being at such a level playing field. Every team really has a great shot at this. So I don't think we're going to see too much. After this first best of five, I think things will calm down a little bit, and we'll see the skill take over a little bit more, the defense coming around. But, for this first round, I think it's a toss-up between the two.
Well, could you imagine being a D-man, and you're like, you're just trying to find your way into the game, and then you look up, and here comes Connor McDavid? When you're at your best, he's going to skate by you. Like, it's not like you can stop him. He just skates by you. And now you're just coming off a four-month layoff, and you've had 3 weeks of practice in a bubble. And you're like, oh, Mike. Like, I think that guys like Connor with pure speed and even maybe a guy like Anthony C who can really, really skate, I think they could really take advantage of D-Man, you know, being one myself. It would really, really be tough matchups to start, because you're not – there's no getting ready for Connor McDavid unless you're practicing against him every day like some of the Oilers' DR.
No, I think everyone in Edmonton has seen that one. I think it was one time when Gregor, I think, actually had his camera steady, but Connor got the puck in the neutral ice and just, I don't know who it was, but blew by him, held him off, had Nico on one side and put it back, shelf the other side. I'm just like, oh my God, you know, that's where he's at now. It's scary to see once he gets real fired up. And I'm really excited to see. I think he's been watching a little bit too much of that The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, just with his little sound bite the other day about the media and stuff. He seems almost Michael Jordan-esque with the media, which is great for Oilers fans, because if he's anywhere close to that, we're in for a long and prosperous playoff season.
Joaquin Gage was born in Vancouver. And Gager, how quickly did you gravitate towards being a goaltender at a young age?
Well, my coach was actually the head of kinesiology at UBC. And so in novice, he took us all out there to do fast twitch muscle fiber tests and biopsies. So, and I won. The next day I had some goal gear given to me, because we didn't have a goalie at the time.
That's so you just had to jump in the spot and do it?
Well, I didn't mind to, because I hated coming off the ice, right? So I think if you I was into the marathon shifts as a young kid, Struds.
I wanted to stay out there the whole time. So, I just fell in love with it right away. I was meant to be a goalie. I knew right away. It's part of it's the equipment. Like I see all these things and the graphics that guys are putting on their pads now and things like that. It just, I had a love for the equipment first and then probably, and then a love for the game second.
So, you know, at that time, I doubt there's a lot of roaming goalie coaches like we see now floating around, you know, Western Canada or Vancouver. So how did you learn the position? Was there a coach you had that actually taught you how to do the two pad stack and things like that?
There was one guy, his name was Norm. I don't know where my dad found this guy. I think he was from like down on Hastings. He looked like Happy Gilmore's caddy, and he came out and he was rifling pucks at me. And it's funny how you remember these things. I remember him. He would line up a puck and then he would yell at me and yell no if I had my angle off. So I had to go back and reset, and then he'd come and look and see if I had the angle, and then just rip one off my shoulder. And then he would like say, see, and I might have been 7 years old, and I was just beat to a pulp by the end of this. But that's there weren't too many actual goalie coaches. I was self-taught, Strud, basically. Out at UBC, there was the hockey school out there, and in the summer times from the ages of like 10 to about 13, I would go and live out there in the dorms and go on the ice all day with all different age groups, just because there weren't many goalies back then. No one wanted to play goal. So I was on the ice all day, every day, all summer for 2 months, and yeah, living at UBC.
So joined by Joaquin Gage, longtime professional goalie and Oilers goaltender. Gager, you know, you played some games as you got a little older in the BCJHL, and you know, judging, I know they don't take a lot from the goals against average of 7.766, but that sounds like that was a pretty sick couple games you had. But why, like, how did you get to the BC Junior Hockey League? Because that would have been pretty young when you jumped in on that first time at Chilliwack.
That was tough. That year was my toughest year playing hockey. I'd gone to Notre Dame for 3 years, and I came home because the chancellor of the school told me to concentrate on playing football and told me that I wouldn't make a dime playing hockey. So I was I was done with that place. And then I came home, and I actually went to Kamloops, and I tried out for the Blazers. And so they had Corey Hirsch and Dale Masson, and I stayed there till about October. And then they said they traded me to Swift Current, and so I went to Swift Current for like a week and a half. And they said, we're not going to keep you, but I was still on Kamloops' list. I'm always leery about what happened back there. I got to talk to Rob Brown's dad about what shady deals he was doing back there. Went back to BC, went to Chilliwack because their goalie was injured. Went in and really sucked for two games, as you can see by the stats there. then went to New Westminster for a month. And then got cut from that team. And at that point, it was so weird. Like I said, well, I don't think I'm even going to play this year. And I remember my dad saying, you can't not play. If you don't play, you're done. And yeah. I phoned up the Bellingham IceHawks, which were the last place team in the league. Went down there, and the coach said, okay, get in net. I kicked the one goalie out of there. We did a few, like, it was funny because the coach sat beside me the whole time and just watched me. Throughout the whole practice, and then the practice ended, and he looked at me and looked at the other guy and goes, yep, you're better than him, you're in next game. he cut the next, that guy. I felt like such a heel because he cut this guy. And my next game was in Nanaimo, and Ken Hodge from the Portland Winterhawks, who was coach at the time, they were playing the Cougars. He came to that game, and we won like 2-1, and I stopped, I think, like 54 shots. The next day he traded for my rights from Kamloops to Portland. Green, I think, was traded for me, and that was it. The next year I went down and played the last couple games in Portland that year. And the year after that I went to Portland, got drafted by the Oilers. So it's a fine line. You know, not all of us are blessed with the Niedermeyer bloodline, right? We can't rely on what others have done for us, Dredge. Sometimes we got to carve our own path.
Oh, yeah, I was riding coattails, buddy. Don't worry, I was trying to hang on as tight as I could to those guys. Gager, no, it's interesting. Like, goalies, and you can speak to it, but it feels like goalies, they're you can't just, it's, I think it's, I feel like it's easier, maybe because I know it better, to chart a player's improvement because you can kind of see it. Whereas a goalie, you know, you can have a good game but still lose 5-2, and you know, you get pounded by 50 shots. So, you know, how did you track, or how did other people track your improvement through that time in that year that, you know, was quite chaotic for you as a developing goalie?
I really think that goalies were such a crapshoot back then. You saw what a guy was capable of and hoped that basically he could refine his game and create more consistency. Growing up, I always thought more goalie is almost like playing golf. You know, sometimes when you're playing golf, you think, oh, this isn't bad. I'm good. I can hit the ball. I hit it there and everything's going great for you. And then all of a sudden your game just leaves you. Like we've heard Mike Smith, especially in the month of December when everyone in Edmonton was calling for him to retire. And you just heard him. I got to get back. I got to find my game. And it's a razor wire sometimes of being, especially the way he plays, like on the edge with his emotions and stuff. It's a fine line. When he's on, though, I mean, there's a reason why he was picked to be on one of the goalies on Canada's Olympic team, because he's a phenomenal goalie. But it's tough to find that consistency. I think when you do coach goalies now, they're so well trained positionally and fundamentals. Like that wasn't taught. We relied more on our athletic abilities and just being strong mentally in net. And I think goalies have so much more of a foundation to fall back on nowadays that it's more mental than anything else, just because you have that foundation and being able to put aside a bad goal or a bad couple of games and refocusing and getting at it again. It's the strongest mentally that make it to the highest level nowadays, I think.
Longtime professional hockey player and Edmonton Oilers alumni, goaltender Joaquin Gage joined us. And Gager, you know, 1990-91, you were with the Chilliwack Chiefs for those tough two games. And I think 4 years later, you're playing for the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, that's a huge change. What was it like just thinking back to those, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier, you're you know, having a tough time, and now all of a sudden you're backstopping the Edmonton Oilers for, two games played that year?
It was absolutely ridiculous I just want to play one game, you know, and the problem with that is if you do get that one game, oh, well, maybe one more, you know.
Yeah.
But just looking at where I had come from, and you don't see it when you're in it as much as you do. Well, anyways, with me, anyways, when I step back and look at what I was able to accomplish when things were at their darkest, I take pride in that. It's tough for me sometimes because I wish I would have had a much better NHL career, but I did something that not a lot of people get to do, and I was able to do it for a very long time and be a player that was counted on and be a big part of winning games and being part of a team. There's no better feeling than that. I have to tell myself a lot of times that remind myself of what I've done, but I had a blast, and I wouldn't be where I am today with my wonderful wife, two kids, and living just down the street from you. Actually, I'm waiting to hit you up at the old Circle K for a couple Slurpees one of these days.
Oh man, we go to that Circle K a lot. I love Slurpees. We ride our bikes down there and we go down and grab them, so I'll definitely give you the heads up. You know, when you were at the Oilers, you guys had a really kind of interesting mix of goaltenders, like elite goalies in Cujo, Billy Ranford, Freddie Brathwaite, and Joaquin Gage. I mean, what was that dynamic like with you four? I guess you weren't all there together at the same time, but there must have been some mixing and matching over the course of that time.
Well, Billy was there at the start. And Billy was arguably, you know, one of the best, five best in the world at that time. So that was tough. I remember hitting, because Freddie and I were kind of on yo-yos. I remember one time we passed each other in the airport in Montreal, and just high-five each other because we were on those moving moving floors, and we just high-fived on the way down. And it was always bad because the guy going up was so happy, but the guy going down was just miserable, right? So he didn't want to look too happy going up, but yeah, Freddie and I had a really good relationship because Billy was prone to a few injuries now and then. He would still play, but it would create a call up at least for a day of NHL pay instead of our minor league pay. So we were kind of happy with that. But I remember when Billy got traded and were the Oilers. I'm sure they did it when we have that golf tournament before the beginning of the season.
Sure.
And I was golfing with Scott Thornton and I think who else? I think Kelly Buchberger was on the tee and I'm just about to hit the ball. And Thorny yells out, "Hey, we just signed Cujo," and I'm in my backswing. I thought, "Oh, you know what? This is a good year for me." And I shank this ball over in the woods when he says that, and I said a few expletives to him. But I don't know if I would have hit it straight anyway, but that was my excuse. But Cujo, phenomenal guy. He was my roommate. Billy was great. I even played with when I came back in 2001, and I played with Tommy Salo. So I was I kind of blame them for me not playing so much. Just I could have used maybe a lower caliber of goalie partner back then. But they were all great guys and great teammates.
Gager, thanks for sticking around with us. I'll send me the bill for your minutes on your phone. We'll definitely get those reimbursed by Connor. Let's jump ahead a little bit. You know, you leave the Edmonton Oilers and you know you spend a little bit of time kind of kicking around the AHL, and then you head off to the Canadian national team in 1999-2000. How did that come about?
As I previously mentioned, when I first left Alpha Murray College in Notre Dame and went to Counts, that was Tom Rennie's first year of coaching the Blazers. And so playing against him for a few years in Portland, he knew me as what kind of person I was as a young 17-year-old. And really that year again was another kind of limbo year. And at the beginning of the summer, he asked if I had the interest to come to Team Canada. And to tell you the truth, at that point, Team Canada, it was the last year that there was a men's traveling team. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was because of me. I did quite well, but it was kind of a wasteland for hockey players, especially like washed up first rounders that didn't really pan out, and a lot of teams didn't want to send them to their minor league team, and so there was a lot of old first rounders that went there. A lot of guys just in between teams, but what a opportunity to see the world and see how the biggest eye opener for me was to see how other countries trained and how they worked hard. Like I had been playing pro hockey for a few years and I wasn't training as hard as I should have. Like we didn't have the knowledge and the trainers. We were kind of always on our own for that. Maybe a workout buddy here and there. But when we'd go to Sweden or Finland and Russia and even Japan, like to see how these other teams went about their off ice things and was really quite an eye opener. And even with Tom, like he told us right at the beginning, you're going to see guys are going to be bigger, stronger, faster than you are. And the amount of time in the gym doing special activities, the ab ball, the different workouts, just using, not doing all the same things all the time. It was a fun year because it was the first time you were actually in a place like the minors it's a meat grinder. And, you know, a guy gets called up, you get five other guys that are pissed because that guy called up and they thought he should be called up, right? So it was nice to be in a place where we knew where we were for the entire year. And we could all work together at accomplishing a goal because as you know quite well, like teams love winners. I mean, if you played on any other team besides the Blazers, I don't think we'd be talking at this moment right now.
I would have been able to shine. I was overshadowed by guys like Aginla and Joan, who were overrated.
finally step out of that Niedermeyer shadow. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Now, joined by Joaquin Gage, longtime professional hockey player and Oilers alumni goaltender. You know, after that experience in the Canada national team, how much did that play into your desire and ability to go and now play over in Europe like you did for, was it 6 or 7 years?
Well, it showed me what hockey was like over there and the lifestyle and being able to, and to be quite frank with you, I was done on the iron lung. I think we had added up how many hours we had actually spent on a bus at the end of 1 year, and it was over a month, right? And I was, you know, got the pizzas, the deep fried calzones, the cheap American beer. I needed good German beer to drink after games, you know, some fresh pizza, something a little different. I was ready for it. It was, I always tell everybody I kind of lived my life in reverse because now I have to work. But before I was just gallivanting around Europe with my wife.
Yeah, and I think that's what people understand. I mean, that the hockey is part of it. And some of the things you would have seen in some of the teams you're in must have been mind-blowing. We'll get to that. But it's a life experience living in, you know, whether it's in Scotland, look, or Sweden or Germany, Italy. Like, you must have had so much just exposure to European culture than people don't always understand. That's a lot of what drives guys over there to play.
Well, yeah, I think it was after my third year and going back, like, I couldn't wait to get back. I remember getting into Frankfurt International Airport and getting like a Hefeweizen and a Weisswurst sausage, you know, and thinking, oh, thank God I'm back home. You know, it was, I just couldn't wait to get back. I loved my time in Europe. Just so many cool things, being so close to other places, you know. It's a hop, skip, and a jump over to, you jump on a train, you're in France, you're another few minutes, you're in Amsterdam, you can go anywhere, you're in the Czech Republic, you're down in Italy. Like, I'm so glad I was able to take advantage of that, for sure.
Joined by Joaquin Gage, longtime professional hockey player, goaltender, and Edmonton Oiler goalie alumni. Your first time, though, with the Scottish Eagles. With some guys like Mike Gickling, Mike Harding, Doty Wood. You had some real beauties in there. What was that league? And Ian Herber's actually, old Herbie. What was that like there playing in that league?
It was awesome, actually. I thought, because that was the last year I played with Edmonton, and I thought there was a chance I would re-sign somewhere, but I didn't. So I was a little bit upset that I did go to the English Super League, what it was called. I did wind up winning the Hart Trophy of that league that year.
What?
I'll show it to you. I'll bring it to the Circle K next time you're down there to show you. it was a different league. It was a lot smaller, and the NHL and even in the minor leagues, guys were bigger, stronger, and there was a ton of I'd have to say university players, and especially from the U.S. And so it was a fast, quick league. There was only 9 teams, but I was actually really shocked at the quality of hockey while I played over there. And I mean, it was fun because it was basically a North American league playing in the UK, because there was like maybe one or two UK players that played on each team. We had the best one, so he didn't hurt us at all. But it was. Being in Scotland, it took me 2 weeks to figure out what these guys were saying to one another. Like, I couldn't understand them, but it was lots of tenants, harps, trips on the ferry to Belfast to play, and taking the black taxi rides, and they'd show us where guys had been shot and murdered and stuff. It was a lot of fun going down to London and playing down there. It was way too much fun for what it was.
When you look at the your time there, you spent 3 seasons in Castles with the Huskies in the DEL. Why 3 years there? And you know, you guys must have had some bit of success when you were if you came from the Hart Trophy of the Scottish League.
Well, I went from Hart Trophy to basically team MVP in my Swedish team. Then I was really heating up, Struds. I was, and that first year in Germany, I was lights out.
And I fooled them into signing me for 2 more years. So,
come
and
on.
And so that's the reason I stayed. I actually did have, I don't know if you were there or not, but it was the end of our season, and I'm the manager from Lugano wanted me to go play in Lugano for playoffs. But my owner didn't want to release me because I hadn't signed my deal yet, and if I could have signed in Lugano, he didn't want me to go sign there. So we could have actually. I'm not sure of the years, but I know you played there. We could have. Might have overlapped, and I would have been bailing you out like crazy, just like I did a young Ian Herbert.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what's crazy is that, and people don't understand that. So I had the same experience. So I went to play in Lugano. Before the season was over, I got calls from teams in Austria, said, when you're done your season in Lugano, will you come play with us? And we'll pay you X. And I actually got a call from another team saying, if you don't go play for that team, we'll pay you to not go there so you don't have to play against you. Like, it was just complete chaos out there.
What people don't understand, it would be like, say, Dreisaitl's deal's up, right? So he's in his last year of his deal. He's got a few months left, and he goes and signs with the Vancouver Canucks going into playoffs. And that's like when I played in Germany, we had 4 guys that had signed on a team for the next year that we were playing that night. You know, like it was completely chaotic. How do you do that in between? I never understood how they did it, but it's just the way things worked over there. It's so funny. I don't know what they did when they got to a playoff situation, you know, like, because I don't know, some of those contracts were written in pencil, from what I understand. You could erase those pretty quick.
They were written in wind, like, because it just, one day it's there, the next day it's gone. I mean, yeah. It's absolutely amazing. Joined by Joaquin Gage, just a couple more for you, Gager. You know, when you look back on your time in the European leagues, was there a story or two that just, like, because everyone has something like, I can't believe this happened. Like, this has happened. I can't believe this is realistic.
Well, yeah, those are usually on my podcast, Chad. I gotta watch it.
The golden ones.
Yeah, I can't say it. But no, there's, I have to think about it. There's too many good ones to really. I remember the one skiing. I'm playing in Italy and going skiing all day with guys on my team we'd get all tanned up and try to hide our faces at practice that night. And it was just such a good time. Like the bus trips going through Alps, getting stuck, having to get out and push this thing, and you look and you're hanging on a cliff. You're just like, I can't believe sometimes what you're doing and where you are. Like Team Canada, so many different places in northern Japan. Like we slept on the floor of this temple and wild monkeys were outside and were throwing bananas to these wild monkeys. So I got to write a book. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely, Gage. Well, listen, buddy.
It'll be out in the book.
I love it. I appreciate you giving us this much time today and sharing your stories. We love it. And I'm sure as we work our way through the playoffs, we're going to be touching base to see what's going on with the Oilers goaltenders. And let's hope they are as good to go as you think they might be.
Let's hope so, buddy. This has been great. Thanks for having me on. And let's circle K it up.
And Gage, where can, I know you've got a new financial planning business going. Where can people connect with you if they're interested in chatting?
You can find me on Facebook, www.facebook.com, at Joaquin Gage at YEG. See some of my services. I'm always available for a chat. And if anything, we can sort out some penalty killing options as well. So you can find me there.
I love it. Gage, thanks for your time, buddy. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Awesome, Stretch. Later.